Washington County was probably shifting from small lot sizes in their zoning ordinances to larger lot sizes before other counties. Mm-hmm. Washington County had an enacted comprehensive plan in 1973. I think you would find that in the foothill areas of the Cascades, on top of some of the buttes, in the Willamette Valley, you'd find similar parcelization patterns. I'm just remembering now that we also checked out tried to apply the small ownerships test to an area of Polk County called Fishville, or I'm not remembering it exactly right, but it's in the hilly area of Polk County, southwest of Dallas. And there were some lands that qualified there as well under the small ownerships test. So I think you would find that in the foothill areas where there's been traditionally been some parcelization, there will be lands that meet the small ownerships test.
In the 100 acre or 320?
No, we were using 320 at that time.
Okay, 1,000 acres. Now you're recommending 1,000. Do you know any of them?
No, there was a recommendation by
that. There was a Farm Bureau representative.
Okay. We did not use that test when we did the field testing because it was not in the bill at the time.
Okay.
I won't pursue it anymore.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Troop. And
what is your recommendation in 320?
Ag for Oregon, and I think I've reiterated several times, we would like to go back to the 320. We think the 100 that's in there is inappropriate. We've had a chance to look at some of the data since that 100 was proposed, and there are some areas we're terribly concerned about, and one of those is Representative Bradbury's area, the Harbor Bench area, and we have a gentleman down there who farms in such things as bulbs and very specialty crops. That is an area that's very highly parcelized. It's in a county that is not known for its good land use planning, and where if you use the 100 acre and the parcelization, it would fit. Even if you took all those, and there are a number that would make 20,000, would be ruled out because of the $20,000 test, even though they're parcelized, you still could pick up areas if you had it down to 100 acres that in this very valuable, very specialized type of an area. In fact, I'm told that the land there sells for around $14,000 an acre, which is a subdivision type price, but it is used for agriculture for the most part. And from that standpoint, that was certainly one of the red flags that Ag for Oregon looked at when we asked this committee to take a good hard look at that 100 acre and please change it back.
Does the Agriculture for Oregon group support the Farm Bureau's recommendation of 1,000?
I would have to say that we haven't really considered that. I think that we would stay with our own recommendation.
So you think something about a third of that would be a little more reasonable?
We think that the 320 is probably an appropriate compromise figure between the 1,000 and the 100 that's in the bill at the present time.
Representative Trahern and then Representative Anderson.
Hector, looking at the Harbor Bench for just a moment, you're suggesting that with the 100-acre figure that some of that might be considered as marginal land?
Yes, it could be, given the... now, they have an agricultural district there that so far fought off. It's in an EFU-type zone there now. They've got an additional thing over there saying it's an agricultural district. But it certainly would fit the criteria for parcelization. And you might be able, within 100 acres, to pick out those parcels that would fit and add some additional area alongside of that into the... things so that you could get marginal land on land that just should not be considered marginal for agricultural purposes.
Representative Trahern.
What is the soil class, general soil class?
I guess I can't answer that. My guess is it's probably class 1 or 2, but it's the climate there as much as anything else that makes it so valuable for what they're using it for.
If, in fact, it is 1 or 2, would it still fit into this marginal land classification?
Yes, because of the parcelization is the thing that would allow it.
It's an or test, Representative Trahern. Representative Anderson.
And Chair, Hector, who recommended the 100 acres?
It came from Senator L.B. Day, as I understand it, and I am not just sure how it came about. We understand there was some misunderstanding there just what that should be, and I can't say where he got it from.
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
It's my understanding that recommendation came from the department. Do you have any?
I'm not knowledgeable as to what the department recommended. I've heard that there was that they recommended 160 or 100 or something, and it got in as 100. I think they were thinking perhaps a larger figure. But I would suggest you ask the department.
Madam Chair,
Representative Anderson.
Next meeting, could we have Jim Ross come in, represent the department? Maybe.
Elton was here for a while. I don't know what happened.
Ron Evers here.
Ron Evers here. You want to ask Ron?
Well, it's getting late. Let's hold that off the next time. I think that could take an hour in itself. The time the department runs through all their recommendations on this bill would be quite extensive, I'm sure.
Is someone here? Any other questions? I have a question. We had, it's not the question that I was trying to think of, but we had someone in from Washington County that stated that we could use, on looking at this $20,000 figure, that the extension agents had that information. Our OSU Extension Service had the data available county by county on an annual basis. Is that information relatively accurate?
I assume you're asking me, Madam Chair. I'm Chuck
Lyles
from the Department of Ag. I don't know that I'm prepared to answer that question. The Extension Service has information relating to productivity of various crops and so forth, but whether or not they can relate that to specific parcels of land as would be required here, I have some question in my mind, but I wouldn't want to say that they could or couldn't. I doubt it.
You doubt?
That they can relate this to specific parcels of land, yes, the income test.
Where would we get that information?
Well, the only source of the information that I can see that would be accurate would be the go directly to the operators. I don't know how else you could do it.
Hector, you?
Yes, Madam Chair, I have the Washington County data, and I don't have copies. I'd be glad to provide these to the committee, however. This is the type of information he was speaking of, and it is put out yearly and does show, but it doesn't show it specific for the individual parcel. And I'm not so sure, but what we're not better to use average figures for that county for that kind of crop than we are to use the specific data. We've heard some opposition that you're measuring the farmer and not the land when you measure the individual farmer. And so Ag for Oregon really concurs with Washington County that it would be good to include the income data that's provided by the Extension Service, which uses local data based on, but it's average data. It's not individual to that individual parcel. But we're, after all, what we're suggesting here is that marginal land not be declared on a parcel-by-parcel basis, but rather on an area basis whereby you could apply this income criteria, though, that's provided by the Extension Service to those lands you're trying to test for whether it should produce $20,000. And we certainly would be comfortable with doing that if the counties in Washington County certainly thought that was a better way for them to go.
Hector, another complaint that the Association of Oregon Counties had was it would take a major amount of their time to, this was on the farm dwelling criteria where you had to produce at least, 2,500 with, you had to average $10,000 before you built your farm dwelling on that.
There are two income tests there in the farm dwelling criteria, and I might go into a little more detail on the...
That's on page four, right?
Right.
Okay.
On the $2,500 test. That is one that's readily available from the Census Bureau, and I have a copy of the Census Bureau data which provides that for the kinds of crops that you have. There are seven categories, and that is available without any cost, and that takes into it includes all of those farm operations that produce $2,500 or more per year, so that you can refer to this table and it will show you the number of acres that each individual kind of crop that's listed in these categories would produce. So I don't think there's any problem with that. Now, we might want to suggest in the legislation, if you would, that this kind of data is acceptable. Now, the $10,000 one is an individual test, and so I don't think it's appropriate there to go to any average data. It's probably more appropriate if the man is going to have to produce that, to actually have him show his that he's actually produced his $10,000 in 2 years.
Hector, on line 27 and 28, the concern that I think some people had, and maybe it was your group, I sort of have it's all run together in my mind who said what, when, and where. The concern that if this were on a small woodlot, that they could cut down $10,000 worth of trees 1 year and $10,000 worth of trees the next year, but it couldn't sustain that $10,000 test. I mean, even though that may fluctuate somewhat, you cut it all down in 2 years, you don't have anything left.
Right.
Do you think that line 27 and 28 on page 4 protects that by saying, is planted in perennials or trees capable of producing upon harvest an average of at least $10,000 in annual gross income?
Well, I believe that we're suggesting an amendment to that to correct that problem, and I don't have it right in front of me here, but I think there is one here. No, I think that is a problem, and it should be corrected, and I can see to it that you get language which would do that.
Madam Chair, if I might explain why lines 27 and 28...
I need your name for...
I'm sorry, Richard Benner. Why they don't... those two lines don't take care of the problem identified in line 26, and that is those are two different tests, either one or the other of which would qualify the person for a dwelling.
Oh, okay.
In other words, if you haven't been producing that kind of income 2 years in a row, you still have an opportunity for a dwelling if the land is in trees that are capable of producing that. But there's nothing that says that if you clear cut 2 acres 1 year, clear cut 2 more acres the next year, and produce your $10,000 a year, there's nothing that says that you have to be able to sustain that. You've met the test on line 26.
So those are two.
The way to remedy that, I think, would be simply to say something like, has produced at least $10,000 in annual gross income in 2 consecutive years and is capable of sustaining that production, or is capable of producing $10,000 in gross incomes annually.
And we're losing our audience.
We are.
We're losing our participants.
Representative Parkinson.
Yeah, just a minute of philosophy. Excuse me, committee, I've talked more
That's
than
right.
I share today.
No.
Hector, a little bit of philosophy. I think just the way you do on this bottom land here in the valley, that it'd be a crime to split it up, pave it over. So I've always thought the prudent thing was that people would build on ridges and less productive land. But this absolutely precludes that, because anywhere in the Willamette Valley you can grow trees.
It's by Peter.
What are we going to do to that? For that? What's the reasonable solution?
That's why I keep...
Because the folks aren't all going to live in the city in that urban growth boundary. They'll recall us all first, and then they'll build out there somewhere. So how are we going to let them build on the... Or don't you agree with that? Don't you think they should be able to build out on the ridges and less productive land?
Representative Parkinson, when we started developing this bill, I had hoped we could get something that would do a little bit more in allowing the kind of land that I, as a farmer, really didn't want to farm.
Uh-huh.
But as I dug into that thing, what I found was that most of that land out there was excellent forest land, and that we were hurting Oregon's forest production. And after all, forestry has been the number one and is not still the number two industry in the state, and that we didn't want to give up all that land out there that should be growing trees for houses. The design, of course, of our land use planning is that the bulk of the people are going to have to live within an urban growth boundary on rather small parcels. But we have hundreds of thousands of small parcels that are still through the exclusive farm use zone, which would be permitted in the marginal lands, that are still available out there. So it isn't that we've cut off everybody from living in the rural area. We still have a lot of opportunities out there for them to go into. But I think it would be unwise for the state of Oregon to cut up all of their, what really is exceptionally good forest land in the Willamette Valley or anywhere else, and let people go out there and instead of keeping that for commercial production. So that I think there is land out there, and as I say, I think maybe the foresters have identified that maybe there is some of that land even in the valley here, which is not that good for forestry, where they could be allowed to go. And if we have identified that with our 85-foot cubic foot in western Oregon, we probably could get some of that that can be built upon.
Pretty much, though, you're saying if you're a farmer, you can live out there, but if you're not, folks, you're going to live in the city.
Well, except for the hundreds of thousands, the 200,000 acres of land in the Willamette Valley that's already been set aside as real residential land, tremendous amount out there that's not built upon. So there is an awful lot of land besides the land that we're talking about that's already available out there.
Could they build on it today?
Yes, that are in the rural residential category, which they can build on today. And it could be...
Okay. Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Representative Lowell. I'm having a terrible time.
One more little question. If this bill passes, could they build on it today?
Absolutely. We have no impact on the rural residential land, the 200,000 acres of land that's been set aside on which they've already taken an exception.
Except, may I continue?
Representative Van Lloyd.
Right now, unless I'm wrong, and Marv Glosia is here, he can correct me, but as I understand it, Linn County's plan has not been completely accepted because of the large amounts of rural residential land, and I'm not sure that what you're saying, maybe I can ask Marv to.
Well, I guess what you're asking is
will that be allowed or won't it be?
In the amount of acres you're talking about, Hector, is that what's proposed or that's already in those plans that have been approved?
I think that goes beyond what's actually been approved, but I think that maybe Dick Benner here, who's already at the table, could answer that more clearly than I.
Richard Benner, for the record. I will bring tomorrow night, I hope to bring a map that was put together by our staff that shows the Willamette Valley. We haven't finished it yet, but we've got it completed from the north part of the valley down, I think, to a portion of Linn County. And it shows basically the floor of the valley up to approximately 500 foot elevation. And what the map shows is those lands for which an exception has been taken by one of those counties and approved by LCDC. The figure that the department uses for the amount of land that it expects either has approved or expects to approve is in the vicinity of 200,000 acres. And I think Ron Eber could probably tell you whether that has increased or decreased as the acknowledgments have proceeded, but I think that's an accurate figure in the valley.
Now, I've got a question for Dave, and I guess I would like your reaction to it, Mr.
McPherson. Is that the best answer I get to my question?
Representative Van Leeuwen? Marvin, do you want to... Ron is back here. Ron could give an answer too, which should have better knowledge of the entire state.
Representing Marvin Gloge, Linn County Planning Department. Representative Van Leeuwen, would you rephrase the question?
Well, my question was, how does this marginal lands bill relate to Linn County's plan, which has not been accepted, and as I understand it, one of the chief objections has been that it has too much rural residential land included. So where does this fall into this whole thing if this bill is passed?
I don't think that can be answered at this time because, one, we don't know how much rural residential land the county will have that will be accepted. This is the battle the county is working on right now, is trying to make that determination as to how much rural residential land will be established. And second, I think at this point we don't know how the marginal land bill would interface with that anyway.
Ron, can you help answer that question at all?
I can't give a specific acreage. Linn County is one of the...
Ron, I need your name for the record.
Ron Ebert, Department of Land Conservation and Development. and I didn't review Linn County, but as a valley county, our experience in reviewing those is a county will take exceptions on the basis of the land being built and committed. It comes through our process, and there will be disagreements over whether all of it is in fact built and committed, and the county will go back, and that gets refined over a period of time. Usually the kind of land that's in debate is land that's in the 15 to 20 to 30, 40 acre lot and ownership range, and is questionably, because of ownership or linkages with existing farm or forest operations, not technically built or committed as the commission defines those terms. And it's my view that a lot of that land, that some of which has already gone through the exceptions process, and that which we're always debating over, whether it was the land in Polk County or Marion County or Yamhill County, would end up going through the marginal lands procedure as it's now defined in the Act. That's the kind of land that has always been the thorn in the side going through the acknowledgement process. It's always hotly debated, and I think a lot of this would go through. It just depends on how you finally define marginal lands, particularly the figure you use on the forestry land definition, because there is, as pointed out earlier, tremendous overlap.
Okay. Representative Van Hoorn, just a little bit. If the Linn County plan, and tell me where we are in the process, were accepted with the rural residential that they have proposed, then if that plan, or what are the chances of that being accepted the way it's being proposed now by the county, then if that were accepted, then the marginal lands bill would have nothing to do with it. If LCDC accepted as rural residential what was being proposed by Linn County, then that wouldn't come into the category of the marginal lands at all. That would be
any land that would be covered by the exception, which would designate properties for rural residential, are not really part of this consideration at all.
Okay.
Prior to acknowledgement, you can factor
it. In reality, what's happening there, as far as the plan is concerned?
The plan at this particular point is hung up in largely in one area of the county where...
By Lebanon?
Yes, south of the city of Lebanon, where the lines haven't been clearly drawn yet as to what will be accepted as rural residential and what won't.
Okay, I've still got question marks, but thank you.
I have one question to ask all of you. What do you see is a problem with putting the on page, I keep coming back to this first test, the standards here on page 2 of what do we want to do? Put the 85 in Western Oregon and the 50 in Eastern Oregon. Is that right? I guess first let me ask Dave, who is with the forestry. Do you think that's a good idea, a bad idea, or what are the problems with doing that?
What's the line, Madam Chair?
On page 2, line 10 and 11, if you'll recall, starting over on the center side that originally was producing 50, and it's capable of producing 85, it's my question is, the problems, the good or bad things that might happen if you put 85 west of the Cascades and 50 east of the Cascades. Used a dual figure.
Madam Chair, Dave Steer from the Forestry Department. If the intention is to limit the amount of acreage included, the amount of forest land included, the 85 will limit it then in Western Oregon to in the neighborhood of 75 to 78% of the land would be out of this classification.
75 to 78.
Somewhere in that neighborhood.
Okay, just 75.
So you'd only be including 22 or 23%.
But this is on the western side.
On the west side. On the east side.
Marginal lands? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you're talking about 22% could be included as marginal lands.
But on the east side, if you include all that 85 and below, you're including somewhere in the neighborhood of 77, 78% would be included as marginal. So you only have 22 or 23% excluded. It's a revert flip-flop situation.
So the numbers would just be just the opposite.
Just about, yes.
Madam Chair?
Okay, so that would be included. So my question to you is, what would your reaction be? What kind of figures would we be looking at if we put 50 east of the Cascades?
Okay, let me get to that. Okay, if we break at 50 east of the Cascades, you'd still be including 62% of all of the forest land owned by non-industrial private owners would be classified as marginal under that test.
Which percentage?
It would still be 62% marginal. That's in central Oregon, that's 47%, and in the far eastern, the Blue Mountains area, it's 82% would be in that classification.
Central Oregon, it'd be 47%?
47%, and in the Blue Mountain area, it would be 82%. In marginal, even breaking it at 50. Now, that's not to say that all of the land that is in that classification would meet all of the rest of the tests.
Madam Chair?
Representative Troop.
Does that seem like a reasonable statement to make, that 80-some percent of the forest lands in eastern Oregon are marginal, should be considered marginal use and carved up into residential home sites, or let's say 47% even at the 50 cubic feet in central Oregon, or 82% in the Blue Mountains? Does, from the Department of Forestry standpoint, does that cause you even a small level of concern at all?
Now, Representative Troop, I think it'd be safe to say it causes a lot of concern. Yes, if we would classify that much land that we consider to be quite productive in eastern Oregon as marginal or unproductive,
takes us a little more time to grow tree over there.
Yes, it does. But still, the intention of the Board of Forestry's Forestry Program for Oregon is to retain the productive lands, and their original cut at what's productive is 20 cubic feet per year.
I'd like to commend you on your efforts.
Your reaction, I guess, Hector, to doing that, a two-part test.
I'm comfortable with a two-part test. I think it's appropriate. I'm wondering if we're not making Western Oregon too broad a classification. I think we looked at that during the break a little bit, and it looked to me like it really should be the Willamette Valley North, and I think there's an area there where you split off on the Lane-Douglas border and make Douglas and South equivalent to Eastern Oregon. Now, I would like to ask
should we be looking at, I'm 50. Amazed at the difference between, we're looking at, my question was east of the Cascades, and yet you look at central Oregon and then the Blue Mountain area, when you've got 82% and the Blue Mountain area would be included as marginal lands and 47 in central, it looks to me like if you're going to use a cubic foot production test, that you might even need to break that. I mean, I don't know how.
The suggestion was 20.
I know, but I'm just saying, I don't know how many categories you want to make there. But, Dave, would your reaction be that we would be a lot better off breaking it into like four regions or three regions or five regions than we are to try to use the same test for the state?
Now, Madam Chairman, I believe that's correct, that showing it differently by regions would have some advantages. I'm kind of at a loss as to suggest a number to you, because it depends on the amount of land that the legislature wishes to put into a marginal classification, and that will vary in various parts of the state by what threshold level you assign. If you assume for Northwest and the north part of the western Oregon that 85 is a good breaking point, if you make that determination, that puts, like I said, around 7 or 8% of the of the non-industrial land in that classification. Excuse me. If you were to make that same break then for the other areas, I'd be hard pressed to suggest a number. But for Southwest Oregon, that would be below 50, and for Eastern Oregon, it would be well below 50. So I'm hesitant to give you a number. That's a
Madam Chair,
Representative Troop.
Does anyone know how 85 ever got in there? What a ludicrous number!
I can suggest that Hector McPherson again. 50 was the overall figure that Ag for Oregon selected in the first place. We did not regionalize it, and unfortunately, the data that's just been presented to you was not presented to us, or I think we'd have come in with a different figure.